Well, everybody, we're back. Z-Dog's back. All right. Me and Tom Heineberg here. We were talking about the Backstreet Boys.
Because we both love the Backstreet Boys. Yeah.
As we as everyone should. They're not quite as good as the Blackstreet Boys, which is Blackstreet mixed with a boy band.
Can I tell Blackstreet? You? Okay. Can I tell you? I shouldn't even admit this, but the Backstreet Boys CD was one of those CDs for me when you're like 7 or 8 years old where I listened to it and an embarrassing amount. I listened to that CD over and over and over and over again. That and Thriller. Those were the only two CDs a young Tom Heineberg had when he was 7.
Okay, there's so many strange things here. Like Thriller and the Backstreet Boys, and I got to say that you were 7. I was like 47 when the Backstreet Boys came out. Maybe 57. Oh, great, the gardener's here. This is perfect. Like, I'm in my garage recording this thing, and you hear, like, Jose's out there, like, going...
You know what? I can't hear it that bad on the headphones, so it's probably not even that bad. Dude.
You know what? The world can deal.
We have no topic for today, but we're going to figure out in a minute after I tell you. Do you know how I realized that I'm just a bona fide grown-ass man, just a real adult?
How's that, Tom Heineberg?
I bought new pots and pans yesterday, and I found myself getting super excited over them. I was like, these are the good pots and pans. They're all clad. They have a copper liner. I was telling my wife about them. I was like, they're pretty good. The technology in these pans, you wouldn't believe it. I've reached that stage of life, Z, where, like, I understand why, you know, middle-aged women used to get excited about appliances on The Price is Right, like when they would win one, you know?
Dude, what are you talking about, middle-aged women? I get excited about appliances, like, and I've been doing that since I was, like, 18. Like, I would watch The Price is Right, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, he's getting a GE refrigerator, freezer combination? Oh, my gosh, that's... I wish I were him right now. I mean, complete with the Marine. Remember, there was always like some military personnel. It's almost like they would select for them.
So right. Some,
yeah. You know, and Bob Barker would be like, hey, Billy Bob, thank you for your service. And the next 12 answers up on the... I know, that was the Family Feud. Never mind.
Same difference. Dude, what have you been up to? I saw you were hanging out with Marty McCary.
Yeah, you know, we had a little bromance yesterday. We went like a, you know, hour and a half or something just talking smack about the healthcare system. He's a super connected motherfucker. Like, he knows everybody. He's like, yeah, I'm meeting with Trump next week. We're talking about price transparency. And then I ran into Obama on the golf course. I'm like, you know, with all your name dropping, okay, I'm hoping you're out in the world telling people like Trump, like, you know, the other day I was hanging out with this Z-Dog MD, just chilling. Got his autograph. Oh, that sounds huge, Marty. That's huge.
How many people are out there hanging out with Obama and Trump? Probably not a lot.
Not many, dude.
Yeah. But, that's rarefied air. Yeah.
Exactly. Rare. By the way, speaking of, I've almost said he's a rare uniter. And then I remembered that someone had tweeted at me, some like Andrew Yang fan had done a parody of Hamilton. And it was like, Andrew Yang, the great uniter. His name is Andrew Yang, the great uniter. And I'm like, and this is why Andrew Yang's going to lose, because his fans are dipshits.
That's how you lose somebody in an election. That's like the Howard Dean, the scream, you know?
Exactly.
When Howard Dean was like, yeah! Remember that?
Yeah! I'm actually rooting for Andrew Yang because I'm actually just one degree of separation from him. But yeah, I was like, dude, you can't put that out there. You want this guy to win? Why are you putting out this stuff?
I'm not even talking about politics anymore, because it's just a foregone conclusion that Trump is going to win in 2020, right?
Assuming he's not impeached.
Why do the pageantry? Like, Trump is going to win 100%. You know what? And honestly, I started off hating Trump, and the more it goes on, I'm like, man, if everything's going to burn to the ground, like, at least we have this hilarious motherfucker to watch while it does, you know?
Well, you're in your, what, did you see the thing about Venice being underwater?
Oh, yeah. You know what I thought of when I saw that? I was like, yeah, you built your fucking city on the water. What do you mean? What were you expecting to happen?
You know what? At this point, this is where you do a racist Italian accent. You're like, built this city.
It's a me, a Venice. I'm a sinking. Oh, no.
It's a me, Vespucci. I built my city in the sinking under the sea level.
You can still get away with doing racist Italian accents. You know,
that's true. It's like the it's the new yeah. It's black as the new yellow or whatever.
Dude, what else have you been thinking about at the moment?
Well, you know, I was really stoked that I got to have Donald Hoffman on the show, man, and we did like this, you know, 2 hour. I was just like, I'm going to ask you all the questions that I'm interested in, and it was so much fun, and we got to hang out afterwards. I was like, dude, this motherfucker is the real deal, dude.
You know
what? This guy is undiscovered.
You know what's funny is I was expecting the audience to have a real pushback to that, you know, but surprisingly, a lot of people are like, you know what? I intuitively feel that this is correct also, like in the comments.
I'm telling you, dude, like that, you know, if you're a hardcore materialist, reductionist, it's, you know, it's hard to upend that worldview because you actually, and I used to be this way, you actually believe that, well, of course, atoms can somehow, you know, get complex enough that magically consciousness emerges. And then you start going, but how would that be? And isn't there a more elegant solution that's not inducing magic in the middle of your theory?
Right.
I don't know, dude. I don't know.
It's so difficult to undo the indoctrination that you were raised with, the dogma that's all around you. It's so hard to peel back those perceptual filters and truly think for yourself on all manner of topics, you know?
Well, it's like Hoffman said, where we undergo object permanence at like, you know, 4 months of age.
Right.
And we're from then on, in order to survive in this interface, we have to believe the interface is materialist and real and solid and a real thing. And any deviation from that belief could, you know, be the end of your life because you're not taking this interface seriously. And so it's very hard to unwind, assuming it's true.
Yeah. But think about it just with everything though, like how hard it is to peel back the dogma on, what you learned during residency and how like that's that expression, medicine changes one funeral at a time, you know?
Yeah. You know, and Marty McCary and I were talking, exactly. Marty and I were talking yesterday on the show. He's like, you know, we're just a generation removed from when like surgeons would just like, you know, cut the renal vein, which is considered a complication, intentionally on every, you know, 10th patient just to practice their skills at sewing it back up, you know?
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, shit, we're just out of the primordial soup.
Well, think about it. Do you know where the phrase blowing smoke up, don't blow smoke up my ass, you know where that comes from?
Cheech and Chong?
Doctors used to actually blow smoke up people's asses because they thought that did something. Like, and that was only 300 years ago when they were doing that.
You know, Tom Heineberg, don't you put that evil on me, Tom Heineberg. I've never intentionally blown smoke in anyone's ass. Maybe bovi or cautery smoke in the OR. I really like Marty McCary. I think, you know, he and I were brainstorming, like, is there a way we can do like a regular segment where we co-host with like, because it would just be fun. Like you take the news and go, okay, all right. You're a Hopkins like surgeon. I'm a former Stanford loser. Like, what kind of damage can we do by being completely unfiltered? And the great thing about him is he does not give a fuck. Like, he's like, I am here to, you know, upend the system, which is great.
Well, I think the lesson with both Marty McCary and yourself is that like you guys are rare. It's very rare to have doctors who come from the ivory tower speak out and say this shit is fucked up and everything that we're doing is wrong, you know?
Yeah, well, you have everything to lose. That's the problem. And nothing to gain, you know?
Right.
It's like, again, Upton Sinclair's whole thing, when it's hard to make a man believe new truths when his salary depends on him not believing them. So that's the biggest problem. And then I had a great call today, I'll have to tell you offline with who it was, but you know who it is, this group that wants to help support really more specific, both political and legal and policy changes that we can promote and help us do that through the show, which I think is going to be tremendous because we're all pretty aligned.
You don't have to be. You don't have to be cagey. I think we can come out and say that it's the Illuminati.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, I'll just say it. It's the Illuminati. And first of all, they you know, but actually, you know, we're using Illuminati. What we really offline, we're going to say it's the Masons. Because the Masons are kind of like a more ancient and old school version of the Illuminati. Like Illuminati feels so like 2000 and late.
let me ask you, did you see the CDC report that 35,000 Americans die of antibiotic resistant infections every single year?
I didn't see that. Are you fucking kidding me? That sounds low, actually.
35,000? That's a shitload of people. It's like 0.01% of people.
I wonder how, that's interesting, just reacting to this in real time, I wonder how they got that number and whether it includes people who die of bacterial infections that happen to have antibiotic resistance but are sensitive to other antibiotics but just are dying of sepsis or other things just incidentally. Because one thing people don't realize actually is that highly resistant organisms are actually not very, they're not as virulent oftentimes as their, in other words, they're not as aggressive as their less resistant colleagues. So they spend so much sort of bacterial energy developing resistance that they become kind of pussy. They're too pussy for life, Tom. On the other, but again, I'm just spitballing here. But that is a high number, of course. And of course, because we use antibiotics like dipshits. And we have,
well, it's like decades. Yeah, Logan, our technical producer. Every time he has a cold, he's like, I'm going in for a Z-Pak, and he goes to the urgent care, and some doctor who's checked out is like, here's your Z-Pak, you know.
Like, just, you mean any doctor in Las Vegas?
Right, yeah, just push them through the assembly. Hey, that's an interesting question. Now that you're out of Las Vegas, we're always ranked really low. And like, I know you still have ties here, so maybe you're going to equivocate a little bit. But I would love to just hear your just raw, unvarnished thoughts about what healthcare in Las Vegas is like.
Sure. And I've said this even when I was there. And I'm going to preface this by saying, I love Las Vegas. It's one of my favorite places. If I could continue living there, I would. Like, it's vastly superior to anywhere else I have ever lived, period. On balance, right? It is the worst healthcare in the industrialized world. It is awful. And just stepping out back to the Bay Area and reinteracting with colleagues and people here, and I just realized, wow, they have a long way to go in Vegas. Like, I would not let my dog be treated by most people in Las Vegas. Now, there's exceptions, right? Like, I still round at UMC Hospital. I think the residency program there is great. I think there's a lot of a growth that's happening with UNLV Med School. But out in the community, holy shit, dude, it is the Wild West of awful.
Don't have to say, I can say it. The UNLV residents are dipshits. They're like, they're people that should have been in the Caribbean. And it just goes to show like how long like it truly takes to build up a network effect of great clinicians in an area.
So I actually found them to be like any residency program. They're varied, right? So there's some that you're just like, wow. And then there's others where you're like, wow, this person is really sharp. And I find that true. So here's a humbling fact. So, you know, I won't say which program it is or how I know this, but like
Stanford.
There's a world class radiology group where, you know, the residents just seem to be getting progressively worse and worse and worse and more entitled and less apt to do things like pass the boards. And they will do things like physically threaten attendings and get away with it because administration is too scared, you know, to lose their accreditation. It's gotten really bad.
Let me tell you something that's been pissing me off. I'm sick of millennials, which is my cohort, getting blamed for these new Gen Z kids. These kids are insane. Like, I don't know if you've interacted with some people who are like 22 and below. They're nuts. There's something like actually wrong with them. In the way that it makes me scared to raise my daughter in a world where she's internet native, you know?
Oh my God, dude. How the times have changed that a millennial's like, these kids. But you know what I think? I said, this is my experience with the Gen Z is like, this is a creation entirely of our making. Like, we've made the most neurotic, depressed, anxious, suicidal, you know, digital native generation. And it's entirely our fault. Like, we should never let them have that shit. And now they're crazy. And it's true. I don't even know how they're going to integrate into the workforce.
Well, the workforce is bad enough, but what there are reports that the workforce is bending over backwards to accommodate Gen Z, especially the ones who can code and stuff of that nature.
Yeah.
You know, Google and, you know, Facebook and Amazon, they're like, hey, whatever you need, man, you want to bring your dog to work? That's okay. Can you just keep making the computers run? Thank you.
It's true. They're going to have to. It's just like we had to accommodate millennials and let them bring their dipshit dogs to work, even though I hate dogs and I want them all to die. Like, I
have you? I don't know if you've noticed, but there's been like heavy intergenerational warfare happening between the millennials and the boomers.
Okay, boomer.
Okay, boomer is the new meme. So it's like It's like, yeah, okay, boomer. And, you know, I think there's a lot of truth in this meme on both sides that people don't like, because okay, boomer is basically just... What the fuck? My TV's talking to me, Z.
Oh my God, dude. And here's, okay, and here people are like, well, no, the TV isn't spying on you. That bitch is listening to
you.
Oh
my
dude.
God. What the fuck? I got to unplug this
thing. Snowden was right, people. Snowden was right. And by the way, Epstein didn't kill himself.
Well, so I think millennials are pissed at boomers because they're like, hey, you guys told us we should all just go work for a pension and blah, 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 and, you know, go the traditional route like you went. And then none of you left your jobs. So we all had to work entry-level bullshit getting you coffee. And then you told us all that we needed these degrees that turned out to be worthless. And so it's like, yeah, okay. Now we're done listening. Okay, boomer. That's basically, that's the meme.
And that's an understandable meme. I'll say this, though, from a medical education standpoint, this incoming like residency cohort at these big academic institutions is one of the fucking lamest, sloppiest, laziest, most entitled bunch of pieces of shit I've ever seen. And I mean, I hear these stories from like the really top program directors, and they're just like, this is, I don't even know what to do. Like I've heard from, you know, chairs of medicine that are like, I won't even talk to medical students because they're just insufferable pieces of shit. And and look, this is generational warfare, because to a degree, you know, it's just a bunch of old people going, well, in my day, we went up both hills.
Right. Yeah.
So there's definitely a component
of
that.
What I think is interesting is the fact that everybody's pointing at the boomers, because generally it works the other way, where everybody points at the younger generation. They're like, these pieces of shit, like what you just said. But it's interesting that everybody's pointing back and being like, you guys fucked this up. You like really fucked this up.
It's pretty funny, man, because, you know, like as a Gen Xer, like I'm the sandwiched, I'm the cynical, like fucking meat in the middle of this shit sandwich of like millennials and boomers. And I'm just looking all around me going, God damn it. Like I will never be okay. Like I'm surrounded by shitheads on all sides, including my own generation, which is the biggest fucking, the whiny, cynical pieces of shit.
This is what I was gonna say, is that Gen X gets to just skate by while the boomers and the millennials like fight to the death, basically.
that's kind of true. We just sit on the sides vaping.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I don't know, man. Anyway, you know.
Anyways, hey, have you tried this new minty rosemary fucking vape juice?
You're like, we didn't have MySpace until I was 32. I didn't like it, you know.
That guy Tom on there was a little bitch, man. I was his friend, though, because fuck it, I felt bad for him. I mean, he only had 200 million friends. I was like, fuck. Yeah.
Don't you think it's just like it's emblematic of everything that's going on in society at the moment that people want to be really mad at the boomers, which is just they're a stand-in for the institutions. And, you know, to be fair to the boomers, they didn't create most of these institutions. They ruined them. They made them worse. But yeah.
They certainly didn't make them better.
Right. Yeah. They didn't put the snowball. They didn't start the snowball rolling down the hill, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this. It's interesting because it kind of relates all back to psychedelics. So the boomers are the beneficiaries of one of the most woke experiences in generations, which was the late 60s, where people were like, wow, you can do a psychedelic drug or go to India and study with a guru, do all this shit and get woke. And then their egos reasserted themselves when they came back in the 70s. And by the 80s, they were just fucking mindless consumers, selfish pieces of shit.
Yeah.
And
what was it that the Chicago 7, 8, who was it with Abbie Hoffman? Like, you know, all those.
Right.
Like some crazy number of them went to Wall Street,
right,
and became the man. And it's like,
right,
because
what happened?
Because it was a power grab from the beginning. Like, of course, it all makes sense. You know.
You know. I mean, I believe in the words of the late great 50 Cent, "Damn, homie, in high school you were the man, homie. What the fuck happened to you?" You know what I'm saying? That's what I say to him. Okay, boomer.
I always like that in Forrest Gump when Abbie Hoffman is the one. He's the one at the, you know, the Washington Memorial, and
oh yeah,
Forrest Gump is like, for some reason this man was wearing an American flag as a shirt, and he liked to say the F word a lot, and when he did, people would scream. That's the worst Forrest Gump impression, by the way. It was terrible.
Oh yeah, it's pretty. It's too refined. It's too refined, Tom Hodge. You got to bring it down, but never go full R word. You know, and I can't even say the R word. My children refer to it as the R word.
That's retarded.
It's pretty retarded, yeah.
You know how I feel about this, that like language, I do. Language I do. Is just,
I like,
yeah.
I like to language bait you.
It's control because people want to control you, and it's ineffectual as well because it's just like, what does it really do for anybody? It does nothing to stop saying certain words, you know?
Yeah.
And then what you hear from the left is they'll be like, language matters. It matters. And you're like, does it though?
Oh God, that's a whole. We've had so many discussions about that, and I'm just like, listen, you fucksticks. Read Jonathan Haidt's Coddling of the American Mind. Get woke. Stop treating our children like fragile little pieces of shit.
Yep.
And we'll do a lot better. And you know, again, tying it back into this whole me complaining about medical residents. Again, a lot of them are amazing, and they work very hard, and they're burned out before they even get there because shit's ugly. But stop being a little bitch. You're not entitled to anything. You know, you do have to put in the work. You do. You really do.
See, I just think of every bitch. I think of everything in terms of memes, and I think the prevailing meme that I think about the most is: have you ever heard the meme that's about intergenerational cycles? And it's weak men create hard times. Hard times create weak or strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men.
Create weak men. And that's on,
this, and right.
On.
And that's the cycle that we find ourselves in. We're probably in the, you know, good times created weak men. And now we're dealing with the fallout from what's been happening in our society.
You're just perpetuating the patriarchy with this men talk. You know,
yeah.
Remember boys to men? Now it's boys to men spelled with a Y.
That's right. We're going to, why, you're always trying to control my language, okay? By the way, I got to tell you this about woke culture. Do you know that Barnard, you know, is classic women's liberal college, they now have a new policy to deal with all this transgender stuff and yada, yada. They just won't let in cis men. So if you were a man and you were born as a man and you feel like you're a man, you can't go to Barnard. Everybody else, if you were born as a man, you feel like you're a woman now. If you were born as a woman, you feel like you're a woman. If you were born as a woman and you feel like you're a man, you're all in. You can all go.
You know what? I got to say this. There's some sick logic there. I mean, I'm just like, hey, yeah, okay, you go girl with a Y. Well, you know what's funny? So Stanford just made the news because, you know, some of the students are protesting the appearance of Ben Shapiro. He's coming to speak on campus or something. And they're like, this is aggression against, you know, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual community. And I'm like, how are words aggression? Like, let him speak and then you can yell at him. Like, this whole thing about deplatforming people is crazy. Look, I don't agree with a lot of shit he's saying, but it's like, I would let him come speak and then argue. Like, have an old-fashioned debate.
To me, I think racism or sexism, I think it has to be based in action, you know? Like, I'm not going to condemn you for the thoughts that are in your head, because who knows what's in your head, right? It's
fucked up, I know that.
Right, and it's like, we all think terrible things all the time. Everybody, there's not a person alive who hasn't had a racist thought, you know?
Yeah.
It's a very natural human instinct, like somebody from a certain race does you wrong, and you'd be like, fuck Mexicans forever, you know? Like, everybody does stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then you have to get over it, and you'd be like, yeah, obviously they make good tacos, and...
And someone like Liam Neeson talks about it openly, and he gets fucking vilified. You know, it's crazy. Fuck. You know what was relating to that? We were talking about what's in people's heads. I told you this story, I think, where I used to work. I had to work an inpatient psychiatric facility, Langley Porter, at UCSF back in the '90s when I was a medical student. That was my psychiatric rotation. So it was the sickest of the sick. Like, these patients were effectively, like, you know, they had to be inpatient managed because they were just absolutely mentally ill. I learned a lot, and I learned that this guy with OCD was very elderly, he's probably passed away, and so he had such bad OCD that he had these intrusive thoughts constantly, and so part of the therapy was he had to kind of openly talk about what the thoughts were, and so he was constantly telling me shit he was thinking about me. And I'm a 25-year-old fucking med student in San Francisco, and this guy's like, right now, I'm thinking about jacking off on your face.
Oh my God.
And I was like, yeah. And I was like, well, at least somebody cares about me. You know, it's like, at least I'm getting some mental action somewhere.
You're otherwise. Like, You're like, I always knew I was sexy. Anyway, thanks for thanks for the validation.
Thanks for the validation, 75-year-old mentally ill man. Oh, man.
If anybody understands that, it's me, man, because my mother is so severely mentally ill, and I've heard her say the worst things to people all the time, and I just have to stand there. Like, you know, she called my, like, principal a cunt or, like, just really terrible stuff. And you just have
Was he a cunt, though? That's the question, I mean.
Well, it was a she, which is, it's always worse when you call a woman a cunt. Yeah, exactly.
That makes it tough. Because now it's no longer funny, like, in a British sense. Oh, you wanking cunt. It's like, it's now it's like, oh, shit, he just called a woman the C word. That's
yeah. I can't, honestly, I can't even pull up memories to describe these occurrences to you because my brain has deleted them because they were so painful and embarrassing.
Oh, my God. You know? My God, dude. How horrible.
God.
I mean, wow. My mom was just my mom, and she embarrassed me all the time, man. I can't say she's frankly mentally ill. I mean, she's just a crazy Indian mom.
I can't prove it, but I have suspicions.
I have suspicions, right. Yeah. I mean, no more mentally ill than I am, but that's this, pretty mentally ill.
This is an interesting conversation. It's like, I've lately been hearing a lot of people talk about things like wraparound services and pouring money into mental health and I think it's all well intentioned, but you know, you can't fix mental health. You can fix like the general sadness that a bunch of these lame pussies have where they're just like, I'm a little anxious. You can fix that, I guess, with talk therapy or whatever, but you can't fix real mental illness.
That's because we're going about it wrong.
Well, can I tell you what I would like as somebody who is actually dealing with a mentally ill family member is especially now, like, okay, it's been 30 years of mentally ill behavior by my mother, right? It's like patently obvious that I'm not trying to, you know, coerce her in any sort of manner. She's been arrested, 20 times over the years and psychiatric stays and L2Ks and all the stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I still have no recourse for dealing with her. Unless I take on a full conservatorship of her. And the only way I could get a full conservatorship of her is if I were to let her go off her meds, which who knows what she could do. She still drives and everything. So, I mean, she could kill somebody. Anything could happen. So, first of all, that's never going to happen. Second of all, even if it did happen, I would have to let her go fully to rock bottom before I could get any sort of control over her. And then I have to legally assume all responsibility for her. So, if she does anything else like that, it wrecks my life. I have basically no ability to help her. And then people look at me in society like I'm supposed to be doing more. It's like I do the maximum and I keep her, you know, from taking tax dollars from everybody else. And yet, no help. Zero.
Nothing,
like,
right?
We don't deputize the families to help with this kind of stuff. Like I was just having a conversation before I got on with you. Somebody was, you know, where I'm like selling a property and I look after my mother's finances and all that kind of stuff. And they were like, well, we're just trying to make sure that you're not, you know, this is no elder abuse here. You're not artificially impoverishing your mother. I was like, my mother is a multimillionaire on paper. Okay. So you know what I mean? Like before you even come to me with this kind of bullshit, like you should know who you're talking to. It just, all this kind of stuff pisses me off.
Yeah. It's insane, dude. And then there's no magic fix.
Right.
That's part of the problem.
I definitely think providing some more help for the families to do as they see fit would be as close as you can get to a magic bullet. Because, you know, the only reason my mother's not on the streets is because I look after her. If I didn't look after her, boom, immediate to streets. She'd be on the streets in three months.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then there's some families who take advantage of that shit, right? So if they're paid to do that, because, you know, it's a totally messed up family to begin with,
right?
It's very hard. We see it all the time. I mean, that's the thing. It fills our emergency departments, and it's just a freaking scene, man.
It's so hard, man. And then you have the thing too where you're like, how do you know what's in somebody's head, or if somebody's not just faking being mentally ill or trying to game the system, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's hard. You know what else is hard? Fucking making a pharmacy metamoji that people don't fucking bitch about.
Are people giving you shit about that one? I think it's funny.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a mixed, like there's a group that thinks it's hilarious and there's a group that's like, this has nothing to do with our pain. And I'm like, well, fine. I'll, you know what we should do, Tom? We should give them that octopus as well that we put out for supporters.
Oh, yeah. Just yeah.
Have Logan edit it and go, okay, here's version two. Which do you like better? Now you'll see why we put out version one. But yeah, I'm almost interested in doing that because it would be interesting.
Well, it's very hard for you to like fully get inside the mind of a pharmacist because you're not a pharmacist. You've never been one.
Right.
You don't have any experience with it.
It's funny because we did Just a Pharmacist, and I think because what I do is I ask them, I go, well, what are your pain points? And they'll hit me with them. And so we have that. It's more that I think it's hard to know when you go full out and you just make it funny and it's a bunch of jokes and you know you're cursing like you do in real life, half the audience gets super pissed and triggered and the other half is like, finally, we've been waiting for this. So you can't make everyone happy. You just have to fucking go for
it. Well, that's why you have to just have a wide spectrum of content, you know, where the content, just like, hey, here's something for everybody. Maybe this video is not for you. Stop being a fucking whiner about it. Jesus Christ, who are the people that go on and make comments and complain about everything? I've never done that, not once. If a service or product or company like truly fucks me over deeply and hard and like bends me over and just, I don't even say a peep about it online.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I yell at them on the phone, but that's it. That's where it ends for me. Yeah, you know?
I've thought about this a little because you almost want to be happy because they're so engaged that they're willing to go with their real name and be like, this is dumb for these reasons and put themselves out there.
Right.
Like they're that like emotionally invested in the platform. So
I think it's narcissistic. Like,
I mean, and then there's that. So, you know, I get private messages that are just off the rails, man. I'm just like, holy fucking shit. I told somebody the other day because they were like, I thought your Donald Hoffman interview was bullshit. I couldn't understand any of it and it had nothing to do with medicine. And I was like, okay, well, I think I said in the beginning of it that it had nothing to do with medicine and that it was going to be complicated and you should listen to the original if you're interested. And also go fuck yourself with a stick. Like this, I'm not here to fucking please the audience. I'm here to do what I think I want to do. And the audience can fuck themselves with a fucking broomstick.
You know, this is one of the things that's most problematic about our times is like, you know, the person who's listening to this pod right now, who's, you know, at the gym and they enjoy this and they're sort of on the same wavelength. They're awesome. You're an awesome person. Like, thank you for never doing anything, making shitty comments online. The problem is most people are that person. Most people just live their life. They, you know, if they enjoy a podcast, they listen to it. They don't engage with it much because like, why are they taking up a bunch of time from out of their life? No, they just like listen to it, go about their day, right? What we're experiencing is like all of the criminally insane,
right? You know, 1% of
people who have legitimate personality disorders are out there online being like, my name is Susie Q and you need to listen to my opinion. And you're like, no, I don't. Fuck you.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you, man, the way Facebook's going too, I just want to abandon the platform entirely. I'm just like, you know what? I hate this platform. Like, there's something about it. Like, because first of all, nothing that we ever post gets served.
Yeah.
But bullshit in these groups gets served, like, spammed to people. So it's like, I posted a dumb article that everyone's already seen. It's going to end up in your feed, like, 30 minutes, right?
Well, normal people are going to Instagram. Like, I mean, you know, most normal people go on Instagram, they post pictures of their kids or whatever, and that's...
Right.
That's because you're not anyone... It's like, you're not writing a paragraph. Like, people on Facebook write a fucking paragraph, and you're like, hey, nobody fucking cares. Nobody wants to read your shitty paragraph that you wrote. Make it concise or keep your fucking mouth shut, okay?
I could not agree more, Tom Heineberg, as the recipient of multi-paragraph messages sent to a stranger, right? Like, hey, stranger,
That's what's killing Facebook, too, is like, not only are strangers doing it, but now you got to see your Uncle Jeff, and he's like written a paragraph under some Obama video about how there's an Islamicist conspiracy to take over this country. And you're like, Jesus Christ, Uncle Jeff, can't we just talk about like the Broncos? That was always our thing. We would always talk about the Denver Broncos. Like, why now? Must I know your insane thoughts? I don't want to.
Oh man, remind me to keep an eye on my battery. It's gone to 0 bars on my recorder. So,
oh shit, you're
for
fucked.
Some reason we
you're fucked.
Yeah,
bro.
You know what? I'll just all of a sudden we'll end the podcast when I run out of juice.
the podcast end when Z runs out of battery.
That's it. Guys, I got a lot to say. Click. It is done. You know what? God has spoken. Whoever he or she is.
I like your ability to procrastinate because you've been like low on battery for the last like 3 podcasts we've done.
Exactly. I keep telling you too. I'm like, Tom, I have 1 bar. What does that mean? Well, see, you should change the battery. Okay, I'll do that. Tom, I have no bars. Right now it's empty. It's like shows a little battery with nothing but black inside it.
Millennials become automatic tech support for everybody in their life.
That's
you
true.
Know, but I can barely work my own phone. I'm just like,
Yeah. Tom, I remember trying to get Tom to like sign into Dropbox to get files. He was like, "No, wait a minute. This involves a keyboard. If I can't use my thumbs, fuck that."
I'm secretly an old man, but also a millennial, you know?
That's true. No, Tom is not even secretly an old man. He's openly an old man. So let me tell you about the property I'm selling, Z. So there's several ins and outs, a lot of what have yous. Oh man, I got on the phone today with the Wells Fargo mortgage broker because we're trying to buy a studio space, right?
To move
the show, which by the way, I think it's going to be a totally different show. I think we have to really rethink everything we're doing.
I agree. Platform. Burn it all down and build it back better. We have the technology.
I'm with you, dude.
Yeah,
like I think it's just got to be like people just talking authentically without any bullshit and even that, and then just like hella shit that we want to do, like metemojis, like crazy rants, like
this is
news shit. Yeah.
This is hard too, because this is a generational thing as well. Like I've noticed that people that are older than 35 have a really hard time being authentic because they think they're supposed to hide their real personality. It's like, nah, man, it'd be way funnier if you were just a human being and you said, you know, some stupid shit like we all do. Like, I don't monitor what I say on this podcast. I never have.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm with you. Yeah, and they always think they have something to lose, right? So, Marty was on the show yesterday, and he's talking shit about when he does speaking engagements, how the fucking people who hire us are often just behaving like the marketing people are behaving like dipshits and asking for our slides 20 times and then trying to fuck with us. And I'm like, oh, this is really bad for business that we're talking about this, but who gives a fuck? The world needs to know how stupid people are.
I always act like nobody's listening. I just act like it's just me and you. Like this is exactly how I talk to Z when it's just us, because
that's true.
It's just us.
This is our conversation. I think that's the appeal of this particular segment of the podcast, is like you want to hear how two people that are trying to do stuff in the world talk to each other. As partners, creative partners, this is how we talk. We brainstorm like this. Like constantly.
It's true. Although there's a lot more profanity. And
100%.
Sometimes we say things that are truly terrible when we're off the mic, you know.
And then we giggle, and then we move on, knowing that neither of us really meant it, but we kind of meant it.
Yeah, yeah. Don't you feel like you need people like that in your life though? The other day I was talking to Zoom, and, you know, and I was just like, well, you know how people think you're famous, but like you're just a big piece of shit, but like people think you're famous, you know?
Yeah.
Zoom was like, yeah, of course. I was like, well, okay, we can leverage that, use it to our advantage, you know.
Yeah. The call I had today, I love people who just fucking put me in my place too. Like I had a call today with these guys I was telling you about, and they were like, well, so let's be honest, you're no Dr. Oz. You don't have that reach. You don't have that influence. You don't have that credibility. I'm like, holy shit. You know what? I was about to like start raging and screaming, and then I was like, nah, this motherfucker's right.
Yep.
Couldn't be more right.
And also, thank you for the compliment.
Yes, you know? Thank you for the compliment. And I think that's how they intended it. But it's like, funny is if I were not doing my life correctly, I would take offense. I would go, I'm going to work with someone who values me as a thing. It's like, no, I'm going to work with someone who pushes me to be better. Who's like, you know, you suck. You need to be better. I think you can be better.
Well, right? this is why we all hate snowflakes and like snowflake culture, is because it's like, man, are you this unaware that you don't know how the rest of the world sees you, how the rest of the world views you? You know,
yeah.
We don't have to all act like you're special. You suck. You're just a normal You're just a normal loser out there in the world, you know?
But you have the potential not to suck. So why don't you go realize that potential? Like, I think everybody has that potential somewhere. They're just, you know, that's the thing. That's why you lessen the potential by saying, I'm already special. No.
Right.
Go do something that makes you special. And if that involves shooting up a school, so be it.
This is where
that I didn't mean. I meant to think that, not to say it.
this is where the self-love stuff goes wrong. I agree with like all the new agey people who are like, you need to love yourself and you need to set clear boundaries and all that kind of stuff. But when it veers into, I'm a special person, you need to acknowledge my specialness. Okay, first of all, I have a list of demands. And number one, you acknowledge how special I am. No. You didn't do anything. you haven't done anything, you know?
Yeah, Nathan. Well, shit, I wasn't kidding. I ran out of batteries. I put some more batteries in, but you know what? Hey, man, when your time's up, your time's up. Tom was about to go on some legendary rant, and y'all don't get it, so you have to tune in next time for Morning Rounds with Tom and Z. I hope you guys enjoy this. Please review us on iTunes if you want. Become a supporter. We're probably going to open that up on YouTube, too, so that people who've killed their Facebook account, rational actors as they are, can follow us as well on YouTube. And we out. Peace.